Hello, it is July 21st, 2015. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 516 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We're back with the Footer and Leach edition. I apologize for two opposite reasons why the audio on the podcast was not ideal. The first one is my fault. The second one is, well, ultimately my fault, because the buck stops here, but less my fault. The first one is my fault is because Allison and I did a podcast from FanFest where there was just not a quiet place in there. So you probably hear Jack Morris talking in the background better than you can hear us. That was my fault. I thought it would be a good idea to do it at FanFest. It was a bad idea. But I got to see Allison in person, which was good. Allison's awesome. And the second one I did with Joe Sheehan, which you should really listen to, and you just have to adjust. Apparently Joe is on, we use Skype, and Joe was on his mic is on a different level than mine. It was not evened out, so he's a lot louder than me. So you have to kind of turn the dial. Some people were saying they had to turn the dial up and down, or they would be startled because they would turn it up to hear me, and then Joe would talk, and it would be really loud. So I apologize for that, though I can say that I'm glad if one of us was loud, I'm glad it was him and not me. Anyway, I am back from Cincinnati. I took a detour to Illinois. My grandmother, who was almost 95 years old, she died, which I thank you for. Please stop with the cards. It's very sweet of you. But it is sad, if not necessarily tragic. She's 95 years old and had 8 children, 21 grandchildren, 22 great-grandchildren. So, seems like a pretty good life. But I got to go back to Mattoon, give a eulogy. I don't know if I did well. Everyone was crying, so they must have hated it. Anyway. So I'm back now, back to normal. I will be this week. I'm very excited on Wednesday heading to the Georgia Dome for the Gold Cup semifinals. The United States will play Jamaica. I will stay for the Mexico and Panama. And I want, and I need, and I know. Match. So my first, I went to one U.S. soccer match in the past. This one's in the dome, perhaps less exciting, but still fun. Anyway, we're back to normal. Allison's here. The Hall of Fame is this weekend. I think we're probably going to talk about that. But mostly, we're back on a normal schedule now. I apologize for all the weirdness. It's been a crazy time. And thank you for not asking me about Tommy Craggs. I am sad to say, though, Tommy is, Tommy is one of my closest friends. He was at my wedding. You have your thoughts of whatever in that situation. Tommy's my friend, and I'm very proud of the work he's done. I'm very proud of he is as a person. And I look forward to drinking with him. But not on Balthazar's dime. Anyway, here's Allison. All right, hello, Allison. It's great to chat with you again after I got to see you in person. How did you enjoy your time in Cincinnati? Did you have fun?
I loved it. I felt like I was on a nostalgic trip through my childhood and my college years. So I knew that I was going to enjoy it. I was very excited the second that I heard that the Reds were going to be hosting it. But the Reds did an awesome job. I mean, they brought back so many former players and just really celebrated the history of their team. I thought Cincinnati did a great job. I think people went away from the experience thinking that, you know, the Reds and Cincinnati really know how to do this right. I mean, I loved it. You know, they had a 90 World Series Reds there. They had Dave Parker and Eric Davis coming out during the Home Run Derby to hold up the trophy. It was great. The franchise four with, Morgan and Bench and Rose and Larkin. I was just like so up to my eyeballs in nostalgia that at the end I was like, I got to get out of here. My brain is like fried at this point. I need to come down from all of this, but I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, it was fun. And, you know, and as you know, you and I are both Rose skeptics, it's probably fair to say. And I really felt like that was about right. I thought that was actually handled not only by baseball, but even by the Reds fans. Like, he got a big ovation, but frankly, it was louder for Frazier.
It was louder for Frazier, and it was louder for Sandy Koufax. So yeah. Sandy Koufax being one of the four greatest living the greatest four living players. So Koufax, they like started cheering him, and then it died down, and then it started up again. So he got like two ovations, and I think that Rose at this point is more of a like freak show than anything. I think people are just like so fascinated by his existence, by the sight of him at 74 years old, and you know, having been out of the spotlight for so long. Absolutely, I think that he should have been part of the All-Star festivities. I think that was the perfect way to do it. I think that he should be celebrated for what he contributed as a player. I don't think there's any question about that, so I was glad to see it.
He didn't take it over. It didn't take it over.
No, it didn't take it over.
And he got the applause that, like, they gave him the applause, but it was not, like, I thought it was going to be more of, like, frankly, it's a good example of why you should not listen to media people, because we don't know what the hell we're talking about. Like, right. I thought there'd be, like, this defiant, yeah, Rose, and it wasn't. They gave him a big hand, and then there were a few boos from the probably non-Reds fan, but that wasn't really out of control either. And then everybody just moved on, and I have to say, all told, I was expecting this big confrontational thing, and that's not really what happened, because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's just, like, I saw one sign, like, one fan sign about, like, Reinstate Pete, and it just seems like, you know, there's a large contingent of people in the greater Cincinnati metropolitan area, including Dayton, Ohio, where I grew up, and people, you know, want to see him reinstated, and they want to see him in the Hall of Fame, but I think for the most part, people are understanding that he's done absolutely nothing except to merely exist through the passage of time. He has not done one thing to redeem himself, to show retribution, to rehabilitate himself. And so at this point, I don't think people really care so much. But yeah, I saw like exactly one sign from a fan to reinstate Pete. It was 40,000 people there every night. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. I thought it was fun. I guess next year I'm looking forward to even more. Also, I missed awesome, terrifying Midwestern storms. Right. I miss those so much. I miss them. Like, it's so funny to watch East Coasters be like, wow, Midwestern weather's very strange.
Yeah, man.
I love it, man.
Austin, that was no joke.
Oh, I know. It's the best. I missed it so much. Like, just, like, random. My hometown of Mattoon, like, is actually right on the edge of where a glacier sat. So, like, it's right on the spot where tornadoes hop around. So we just get tornadoes constantly. Like, tornadoes don't even, like, phase me anymore. Like, every other bit of weather, hail, I snow freaks me out. But tornadoes, it was just awesome. I really miss that. One of the many parts I miss in the Midwest, definitely those crazy storms. Now, you have another trip coming up this weekend I want to talk to you about. You are doing something that I have not been to Cooperstown. Since the last, tell you how long it's been since I've been to Cooperstown. They had this foyer. I don't know if they still have it. They had this foyer in the front before you go into the actual hall, where it has all like the players, the stars that are currently playing have like banners hanging from the ceiling, and there's like the implication is, here are your future Hall of Famers, here are the people that are coming, and Pete Rose was on it. So that is how long it has been since I've been there. So it's been 30 years. I went there when I was like 8 or 9 years old. So you're going this weekend. How many times have you been? Do you go every year?
Are you kidding? I've never been.
Oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Yeah, no, I've never been. And
ever. You've never stepped foot in Cooperstown before?
I've never stepped foot in Cooperstown. I wanted to go several years ago. I kind of had a trip planned, and then Jeff Bagwell was like officially announcing his retirement. I didn't feel like, as a reporter covering the Astros, I didn't feel like I could miss that, so I bagged that, thinking that, you know, I'll get back there. But no, I mean, I wanted to cover. I mean, we have like a group of people that covers it every year. I wanted to cover it the year that Gary Carter went in, because Hal McCoy was also honored for the Journalism Award. Those are like my favorite player, my favorite writer. I asked for that. I didn't get what I wanted on that one. So, and that was like 12 years ago or something. And I've never really I've never really entertained it since then. So right around 1999, I was working for the Astros. It was my third season with them. And I was like, oh my God, Bagwell and Biggio, these guys are going to the Hall of Fame. And I've literally been thinking about this since then. And so I can't even explain. Like, I'm beside myself being able to go there, cover it, just be a part of it. It's going to be amazing.
So when are you getting in? Like, how long are you there?
I'm getting in a Friday. It's really hard to get there, and it's really, you know, it's just it's a very long trek. So I'm getting there Friday, and then I'm leaving kind of late in the afternoon on Monday. So I hope to have some time on Monday, maybe to sniff around there a little bit just on my own. But there's festivities that start like kind of Saturday. They have a lot of activities, of course, the ceremonies on Sunday. And I don't know really what to expect, except just everything that I've read and heard about it. But, you know, as far as actually experiencing it, I'm just, going to be like a wide-eyed kid and hope that I write some meaningful things while I'm there.
Yeah, I definitely did not go during an induction weekend. So I feel like it's just going to be a madhouse.
I wanted to go. I mean, it's always been my intention to go on my own at some point before Biggio got in. And then, you know, life happens. And the only time that I really have like totally like free and clear is, like, I talked to Brad Horn. I was like, you know, I want to maybe come like in January. He's like, seriously, you may never get there and you may never be able to. Right. Like, don't come. Right. So, you know, it's just, things just go on, and I just was never able to get there on my own. I just wanted to get a lay of the land and just kind of see it before the chaos. And of course, the year that Biggio gets in, three other guys get in too. Right. So this is going to be like their biggest, probably attendance and everything. But, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be great.
Yeah, it's strange because, you know, we freak out every late December and then early January about the voting and who's getting in, and everyone's kind of dogmatic approach to voting these days, and it turns into this thing that, frankly, as someone that, you know, grew up loving to talk about the Hall of Fame, now it actually kind of exhausts me because it's just everybody yelling at each other.
Yes, and you and I have our agreement on that. It's like it just got so ugly with Twitter and everything.
Yeah, and just everyone, yeah, and even like it ugly, it gets ugly, but it also just becomes intractable. Like everyone has very strong opinions about the Hall of Fame, myself included, and it becomes dogmatic. It becomes religion. It becomes Bond should be in, no, he shouldn't. Stats should count, no, they shouldn't, and blah, 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 right. And back and back and forth. And it's so, but then the actual induction happens, and it's like this side thing that the trade deadline overwhelms. It's a weird kind of thing about how, like, the actual induction, for people that are there, they always just talk about how this is, it's this incredible experience and how wonderful it is. And when we talk about the Hall of Fame, it's all with this kind of wistful, gauzy-eyed, you know, beautiful thing. And but then it's actually going on. It feels like it feels like a sideshow. It feels like a smaller thing compared to, you know, is a middle reliever going to get traded from the Brewers?
Something? It's one of those things that's like tucked in, like exactly where it needs to be. It's like right after the All-Star game and right before the trade deadline, and like then I don't know. I guess you could maybe have it in August, but I remember I don't really think about the Hall of Fame induction so much because all I do is watch them on TV like everyone else. But I got back from All-Star and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to Cooperstown like next weekend. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the trade deadline is just fascinating. It's just a thing. It's a life of its own. But I think that the Hall of Fame inductions this year are just going to be so big because you have four guys from four different markets that are pretty sizable that are going to be represented, and you got like Pedro Martinez. I mean, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's a warm-hearted win too. There's no there's like all four of these guys. None of them are really the only one that even has any slightly unpopular is Randy Johnson, and only in with New York.
You know, it's so fun. It's so great. This is what I love, because I went over to Austin a couple months ago and did a story on Randy Johnson and Geddy Lee, the lead singer of Rush.
Yeah.
You know, and Randy is like this big photographer now, and he photographs Rush and all these other places. He is the most relaxed, the happy guy, and I can't wait to see him like Hall of Fame weekend, just to see him taking everything in. I mean, he has done a complete 180, and I don't think it's insincere. Like, I don't think it was insincere what he was when he was a player. The 2 months that he was in Houston, like I don't think I talked to him. He wasn't very nice. And then the guy that he is now, he's just going to have so much fun. And then you get like the fun loving Pedro Martinez on the other side. So it should be a hoot to just watch the whole thing.
Yeah. Randy Johnson did what I always want athletes, Hall of Famer or otherwise, to do after they retire. Like, if they have enough money, to be like, I can do whatever I want. They actually go and just do whatever they want. Like, they don't, like, go become, like, do a car dealership or have, like, some lousy sports bar just outside the town doing all these things they don't care about or coach a high school team, fine, do whatever. But, like, I love that, like, Randy Johnson is so much more interesting in retirement than anybody ever thought he was when he was playing.
And the funny thing is, like, he's totally, like, he was a photojournalism major in college. Yeah. So he's totally doing, like, what he was, you know, preparing himself in life to do. And the way he talked about his college years, just, like, he would work for small magazines, and they would send him out to all these rock concerts because nobody else wanted to do them. And so he saw all these, like, fantastic concerts back in, like, the early 80s. And he was very, very serious about it. And he's a pretty smart guy, too. So I don't know. Maybe he'll be photographing his own induction on Sunday.
It's pretty great. I love that. I love Randy Johnson so much. Also, my favorite thing, if you go to his website, the thing that shows up when it's loading, because it's like all athletes, he's made it all some weird flash intro thing that you don't need. But as it's loading, it's a cartoon of a bird exploding. Like when he hit him with the ball, which is hilarious. And guy that Randy Johnson has a good sense of humor about that.
Yeah, and the thing, I just watched a special on him on MLB Network, and he was like, I hate that I'm remembered for that, you know, that one. I'm like, dude, that is like the intro to your website. Is like, a bird exploding and dying with feathers going everywhere.
The Baseball Perspectives podcast, Sam Miller and Ben Lindbergh were talking about how if moments throughout history where they wish they had StatCast and the HD video that we have now, and that was not one of them. That was definitively now we just know the ball hits the bird and it just explodes, and that's just all that happens. There's no blood, it's not terrible, but like that's what makes it funnier. But now, the way we have cameras now, I love that of all the people that would hit a bird in a warm-up, it was the guy that threw the hardest.
Exactly. It's so disgusting, too. If you watch it in slow motion, it's, like, really gross.
Yeah, it's not good, yeah. But, of course, the other two guys, Pedro Martinez, to me, is, you know, I was fine during the Franchise 4 thing. There were a lot of people discussing of, like, if you had the top five players, top four players that were still alive. There was some debate about them, but if you were to do the last 25 years, best four players we've seen in the last 24 years. I loved Randy Johnson, but to me, at his peak, Pedro Martinez, I've never seen anything like it. Not only was he dominant, but he did it with such, like, even at the end, I remember at the end of his career when he's pitching for the Phillies in the World Series. People like, I only like the Pedro Phillies years. Like, I wonder if there's people like that are loyalists that way, like hipster baseball fans. But like, I love like Pedro. Even when he had nothing left, he still got guys out just by using that wile and all that kind of craftiness. People talk all the time about how when they're younger they have great stuff, but they wish they would have known how to pitch the way they did later. Pedro Martinez for that stretch had the best stuff in the world and was Greg Maddux. It was amazing to watch.
Absolutely. And I think that we were asked to pick our four. They did some story on it on MLB.com. And Pedro was one of my four. I mean, yeah. I know that's kind of controversial, but if you take the amount of time that he pitched, and he was so dominant, and you take the era that he pitched in, I'm not saying that he was better than Koufax. I mean, I think Koufax absolutely, but I think that the passage of time kind of also like romanticizes the older players a little bit. But I think when you look at the raw numbers and just exactly what you're saying, I mean, I think Pedro Martinez has to be one of the greatest living ever.
Oh yeah, I know this marks me as a young person, but I would put Pedro above Koufax. I feel like a lot of the Koufax romanticism, as awesome as he is, he's a great guy, which makes like a huge difference, and like people really love him. And he vanished from the public eye. He left the game early, and then he like never really gave interviews. It was kind of private, and I think that's kind of enhanced the lore about him a little bit. And he's a great pitcher, no question. But to me, like I know that this is exactly the type of thing that would really annoy people that love Sandy Koufax. But if you run the numbers, it kind of looks like what Pedro was doing was that much more amazing. And of course, then John Smoltz, who's the one person on this list I've actually spent a little bit of time with. I've done some MLB Network stuff with him. I actually like, again, all these guys, you know, you meet them afterwards. I don't know, maybe John Smoltz was a monster in his career, I don't know, but he seems like a pretty like anytime a Hall of Famer will sit and talk with me and not treat me like the dirtbag that I am, I have to say is amazing. Like, I feel like that guy is like a really, really nice guy.
You need to give yourself more credit, but yeah, he seems like the everyday kind of guy. Like, he looks like a normal guy, and he's just well, the funny thing about Sandy Koufax, okay, so I went to at a museum here in Houston a couple years ago. They had this like rare sports artifact guy who had come up with all of this tape and film from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, like so long ago. And he did this like presentation, and they had Sandy Koufax's press conference from start to finish when he retired. So he's 30 years old, and he answered questions for like 20 minutes. This thing went on, and so then the Dodgers like win the division series, and I'm in there covering it, and he's in there. And so I was like, I'm going to introduce myself to him. And I don't care if it's inappropriate. Sandy Koufax is like 2 feet from me. Mm-hmm. So I like introduce myself to him. I'm like, okay, now I have two things that I can bring up: this film that I watched, or the fact that I went to the University of Cincinnati and he went to the University of Cincinnati for 1 year and played on the freshman basketball team. So how do I like, which one do I use to introduce myself? So I said, I was just at this rare film thing, and they showed your press conference from start to finish, and the questions from the reporters were so stupid. And he said, they always are. And that was the end of it.
Yeah, so, that's good. That's good. That's
the questions were so, they were like, so what are the Dodgers going to do? He's like, they're going to find a fourth starter. They're like, well, what are you going to do in your life? He's like, well, I'll figure something out. They're like, are you going to get married? He's like, that's any of your concerns. I mean, it was, they were like, accusing him basically of deserting the Dodgers. Like, how can you leave this team? He's like, well, my arm is about to fall off, and I can't put any more drugs in me, and I want to still have use of my arm later on in life. And they were like, well, they were just it was a very kind of hostile question and answer session where they could not fathom that he was bailing on the Dodgers. It was fascinating.
Well, thankfully, reporters have gotten a lot more cordial and nice and intelligent now.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to worry about that. And then the fourth guy's Biggio. Tell me about Biggio. Like, how much time have you spent with him? Obviously, you've been connected to the Astros for a long time. Biggio seems to be, even more than Bagwell, the guy that is the guy for that franchise.
Yes. I mean, I would say that Bagwell, I've always said that Bagwell is the better player.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree.
Always feel that way.
Biggio is the guy.
He's the guy. Yeah. I mean, he played 20 years. He, made like 3 position changes. He works for the team now. He's a little bit more visible than any of the other former players. I think that when he got the 3,000th hit, and then he announced his retirement, he was able to retire in the way that we all want our franchise heroes to be able to retire. And that's not just to not get asked back, but actually to be able to announce it yourself and do it right. Last game of the season in 2007 was amazing. He lives in the hearts and minds of people in Houston. And so I think that just him getting into the Hall of Fame, I think that pretty much solidifies it. You know, Nolan Ryan, of course, went in as a Ranger, and he means so much to this franchise too, but it's not the same because he's not in the Hall of Fame as an Astro. And so Biggio being the first and only player in the Hall as an Astro is huge for the city.
Will there be a pilgrimage of Houston? Obviously, you're one of them, but like, will there be a pilgrimage of Houston people? I know that when Ozzie Smith went in, a lot of Cardinal fans, that was the guy that they really, really wanted to see in there, and they made the trek out there. Him and Jack Buck, actually. Do you think that'll be a thing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've heard a lot of people are going. I don't know if that's like really commensurate to how many actual Astros fans are going. I'm so, locked into like a small community here.
Right.
There are people that are going up there. I don't know that Bagwell's going to get in. I think it's a 50-50 chance. Let's say he doesn't. This is it for a really long time for the Astros until maybe like Jose Altuve if he keeps going the way he is.
Yeah.
But we're not going to see another Astro Hall of Famer for a long time if Bagwell doesn't get in, and he only has a few more years left on the ballot. So I think people realize that. I think that we'll see a pretty decent contingent up there, not the same as the Red Sox, who are obviously closer. I think there'll be more Astros fans than the Diamondbacks fans, but we'll see. But I think there'll be some.
You and I have somewhat, not dramatically different, but somewhat different views on PEDs in baseball. Do you think Bagwell should be in?
I do. I do think he should be in. I mean, I think that, see, I think what's happening is there's a certain amount of people that think that they're not going to vote for anyone they suspect for being PED users.
Agreed.
And so I think that the other people that are open to it, I don't think that they understand that Bagwell is actually a Hall of Famer. So I think the ones that are not suspecting him of PEDs are, I think there's too many of them that don't really realize what kind of career he had. Because
see, I haven't met a lot. I have to say, I always kind of assumed the reason he was not in is because for the same reason Piazza wasn't in. I agree with you. He's basically Frank Thomas.
But that's exactly, I thought that, but Piazza is like percentage points away from actually getting in, and so it's kind of understood that he's getting in next year.
Right, so there must
that's
be something.
I'm like, okay,
right.
Hold the phone. You're if
right,
you guys
right,
honestly
right.
are putting Piazza in, which is fine, then it must be that there's just, Bagwell played in Houston, Piazza played in New York and L.A. There are more eyes that were on Piazza through his career, and I don't know that they're really considering the fact that Bagwell's numbers are insane, and when you compare him, he's in a lot of top fives with a lot of guys that are known as the legendary greatest players in the history of the game. So,
oh, yeah, I don't think there's any question that that Bagwell should be in.
I think there's more writers that think that he actually wasn't that good. I mean, really do, because if Piazza gets in and he doesn't, then that's 100% what it has to do with, that they just didn't really pay any. That's the thing that's the problem I have with the Hall of Fame voting. And it's not the vitriol, and it's not like, oh, I hate baseball writers. It's like, there's like 60% of you guys that literally never saw him play a single game, and you're voting. And I think that's weird. I think it's weird.
I agree. But of course, to be fair, because I always feel the same way. I always feel like they got to figure out some way to fix this voting, because there's so many people that don't know what they're talking about. But ultimately, the thing I land on is, well, they should just let me pick. Because ultimately, I mean that's half jokingly, but I often find like the people that I feel like shouldn't be voting are people that are using rationales that are different than what I think.
The problem that I have is that I just think that baseball writers, if you're going to have baseball writers picking, just make sure they're baseball writers.
Right,
so
yeah, yeah.
This is not the Supreme Court. You don't need to have a lifetime vote. When you get your 10 years in, it doesn't mean that you need it for 50. So if you've covered baseball for 30 to 35 years, then you should be grandfathered in to vote for the rest of your life. But you need to have some kind of consistency in covering baseball. So if you cover it for 10 years and you leave it for 20, you don't still need to be voting on the Hall of Fame, especially if you don't watch baseball anymore. And so they just need to clean it up. They need to eliminate like 40% of the voting party, the voting body.
Kill them.
Most people agree with that, but when you see these knuckleheads that are like putting on their blogs how they voted and they literally have not seen a baseball game since 1987, I have a huge problem with that. Huge. I mean, it's just flat out 100% wrong, and that needs to stop.
Well, here we are again, the weekend of celebration for the All-Star game, complaining about the voting process. It's just the way it works. It's just the way it works. It's I guess it's just inevitable at this point. Okay, one more thing. I'll talk to you about the – we've talked enough about the Astros, so I don't want to talk to you about them falling out of first place. We can do that later because maybe they'll be back in first place the next time we talk. You never know. So, but the last thing I want to talk to you about, ESPN, I almost feel like the fans are like my beat in a lot of ways. So I was kind of fascinated by this. ESPN just did a power ranking using some sort of weird math thing. You can tell I tend to not trust the math on this because the team that got first got a 100 on the button, which makes me think that your math is a little shaky. But they ranked the top fan bases top to bottom. Their top five fan bases. I think it goes with like the idea of loyalty and so on. Number five, number five is Detroit. Four is Milwaukee. Three is St. Louis. Two is San Francisco, and one is Boston. Cincinnati is six. Some other curiosities. The Yankees are 10. The Royals are 11. The Cubs are in the middle. The Rockies are ahead of, like, the Dodgers, which I find unusual. The Mets are shockingly low. They have the Mets fourth from the bottom, which I find insane. This is sponsored by Ticket City, which makes me think there's some nefarious capitalism going on in these rankings. But I'm just curious, when you look at these rankings, and I think I know the job of rankings is for us to argue about them. I think these are particularly shoddy, but I'm curious, when you go to events like the All-Star Game, or you go to events like the World Series, or events where there's not necessarily just one fan base standing out, or like you even see when you've seen Houston play a bunch of home games and road teams have come in, have there been fan bases that have really struck you when you've seen, oh, that team travels really well, oh, here come the Rays fans, or whoever? Are there fan bases that really feel like they can take over a stadium when they come to it?
Like a visiting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because, I mean, for so many years it was the Cubs and the Braves because of their national television networks that are, you know, no longer show them on national TV. So I remember being in the Astrodome in the late 90s, and I mean, there were so many Braves fans. That's because, like, the Braves just, you know, throughout the South and Southwest, that's just who you rooted for. So, I mean, you know, the Red Sox became, like, the cool team to root for. So in the last several years in Houston, like, there were tons of Red Sox fans there. But I think that, like, really, as far as, like, travel, well, actually, there's a lot of Cardinals fans that are in Houston also, and I've seen them all over the place as well. But I think that when it comes right down to it, it's more just Yankees and Red Sox that you'll see in other ballparks. I just think it's funny because the Cubs, I mean, the Cubs are always going to be the Cubs, but it's funny to see, like, how much fewer, like, the fan bases are in, like, opposing ballparks with those two teams, and the amount of, like, 22, 23-year-olds that are starting to not remember why the Braves were such a national phenomenon for so long. I'm like, do you know why there's so many Braves fans? Like, one of my interns, she's like, I have no idea. And that's the way it's going to go back to. The Braves are just going to start being the Braves again, the Braves in Atlanta or whatever suburb they're in. And so I think it's just going to be like the Yankees because everyone loves to hate them or loves them, and the Red Sox if they, you know, kind of maintain any kind of winning ways in the next few years.
Yeah, and maybe that's good though because, you know, one of the things I think baseball has always had going for it is that it really is a regional game. Like, it's a national game that, like, collectively it's a national game, but it's really a regional game. It's a thing that goes on every day. in a town. And
yeah, and I mean, what's happening now, it's just, it's totally changing the landscape. Like, now you don't have, like, I have one of my close friends, she grew up in Oklahoma. I mean, so the Braves were on every day on TBS. That was her only connection to baseball. Yeah, yeah. And so she was a diehard Braves fan. But now it's like, you can live anywhere and you can just continue watching whatever team, if it's not local, but if it's, you can just get it on your phone, you can get it on your computer. And so you can, like, pick a team and stick with the team. You don't really have to change loyalties because you get to choose.
Yeah.
You don't have, like, the national TV people choosing for you. And so it's just, it's changing everything. In another 10 years, no one's going to remember what it was like in the 90s. It's crazy to even think that. I don't understand. Like, what criteria is this ESPN list? I can't even believe I'm giving them, like,
I think, you
any
know,
kind of credence on this whatsoever.
I have to say, now that I'm looking at it, it's funny because, like, this doesn't appear to be an ESPN list. This appears to be a Ticket City resale stat promotion thing that someone at ESPN made Jason Stark write something about.
Or Jason Stark.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually kind of what it looks like. That's kind of what it looks like to me.
Yeah, Jason, I mean, I'm going to go into the assumption that Jason had absolutely nothing to do with any of this.
He did not have anything to do with the rankings.
Okay, so the Padres being like anywhere, if the Padres can actually fit on the screen and I'm seeing the, okay, so I'm seeing the Red Sox first and I'm also seeing the Padres on my screen, this is a stupid, stupid list. Yeah. We need to move on from this.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I just like the idea. But I do like the idea of other fans kind of coming in, not taking it over. Because in football, it feels like an invasion. Like every year, I'm an Arizona Cardinals fan, and every year the Cowboys or the Eagles or the Steelers play there. Even though they've gotten better, I think there's more Arizona Cardinals fans than there used to be. It's still like an invasion of standing. It feels like an aggressive maneuver.
Athletics do not need to be last. That's ridiculous, and it's insulting. And for them to be behind the Marlins in anything is silliness. But the Athletics, I mean, my God, let's not continue to make them a punching bag. They actually have, like, really cool fans. I know they don't get a lot of attendance, but they have a pretty loyal fan base. They're competing with the Giants all the time. They have a terrible ballpark, and it's not easy to get to. So, I mean, you have to cut them some slack there.
Yeah, I think so, too. And one thing I would like to see down the line, and one thing that we were talking about before we went on, when I was in Cincinnati for the All-Star game, I went to Dayton, we were hometown, to the Dayton Dragons game. And one thing I would be fascinated, maybe I'll work on this sometime, is the idea of great minor league fan bases. Like, great minor, like, because Dayton, I think they famously have sold out, like, 5 years in a row or something. Like, their games are so well attended. And, like, I almost couldn't get in for a minor league game.
They've sold out since they started. It's not five, it's longer, however long they've been around, which has been, like, more than a decade, I think. But they have the longest sellout streak in professional sports history.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I'm a big fan of minor league baseball generally, and so maybe I'm just wondering, the real question is, what minor league teams and their fans are above the Marlins? There's got to be one. There's got to be some. There's got to be some.
There's a minor league teams that are.
There's got to be some. There's got to be some.
Pawtucket Red Sox. I know they're moving, but aren't they like in the Durham Bulls? I mean, these are like teams, right? And they're like
Birmingham
really
Barons. Popular. Birmingham Barons are a big fan base team. I think the Memphis Redbirds are a big team. But what's that?
Corpus Christi Hooks, man. They love their baseball down there.
Oh, I love that. Actually sounds fun.
That's the best. Oh, my God. I used to get so excited when I go down there to write stories on minor leaguers because that's one of my favorite places on earth, truly. Corpus Christi. It's great.
You don't hear that. No offense to Corpus Christi. You don't hear that often when people talk about the greatest places on earth. It's not always, like, it's usually more like Lubbock. Maybe not Lubbock, but maybe not Lubbock. All right. Well, hey, have a wonderful time this weekend. Have a great time.
Thank you.
I'm very envious. I'll have to wait until, McGuire gets elected. That's when I'll,
Who's next for the Cardinals? I guess that would be Pujols.
I think. But it's funny, you know. That's actually, if I may have a Cardinal fan moment, this is something I was talking to some Cardinal fans about. Every Cardinal fan, this is really, like, Pujols at the All-Star game was really the first time where Pujols was back on the national level again since he left the Cardinals. Can I say, and you know, obviously, you know, I don't think there was so much vitriol. This wasn't like a LeBron Cleveland situation, but I mean, the Cardinals had just won the World Series, so that helps. But when Pujols left, I don't think people were not happy with him. But people didn't like hate him, but they were sore at him. You know, it was like he left the Cardinals, and with understandable reason, the Cardinals didn't bring him back. But I have to say, it felt good. You know, this is a very collective thing among a lot of Cardinals fans to talk about. It felt good to root for Albert again. It felt good to like him again. Like, he was so likable at the All-Star game. He's great in the home run derby with Peterson and his brother, and And when all the Cardinals got booed during the opening pregame introductions, he pointed to the Angels and had a good sense of humor about it. Like, I have to say, I'd forgotten. Like it was like meeting an old high school buddy. That I was elated to enjoy Albert again. I'm not quite ready for. I don't know if I'm quite ready for standing ovation in his first at bat, because he hasn't come back yet. His first at bat yet. But I will say that was. Because when he said Albert Pujols, I was like, no, someone that's a Cardinal. But of course, he'll be going in as a Cardinal, I'm sure.
Of course, he'll go as a Cardinal. Yeah. The thing that bothered me was that he signed on to be, for 10 years post-retirement, to be working for the Angels.
I know. That rubbed a lot of Cardinal fans the wrong way, too.
I thought that was unnecessary, and it was basically like thumbing his nose. This is a family podcast, thumbing his nose at Cardinals fans, and I thought, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're tying yourself till you're age 53 to the Anaheim Angels. Whatever. Okay, dude. Fine.
Certainly, that was the part. I mean, if he was going to leave, it stunk. But everybody understood. That certainly grated a little. But that said, like, you know, it grated enough that, like, not so much that, like, now we're 3 years later. He's in his third year, and it just felt good to cheer for him. He, like, you forget how, like, you know, you just forget, like, you know, he's not always the most. Like, you know, some of the battle, I understand why opponents have not always liked him throughout the years. But, like, this is a Hall of Famer. This is an all-timer. And it was kind of exciting to see him. And, you know, you and I talked about this in last week at FanFest, that when people get back in the home run derby after people don't care about them being in the home run derby as much anymore, like, all of a sudden now he's like, wait, no, I want you to like me again. I'll go in the home run derby. So I think there's an element of that. But nevertheless, it was almost, I wouldn't say a humbled Pujols, but he seemed more human than maybe at the top at the time of that negotiation. So I kind of enjoyed seeing that. But
I think it was totally humble. I mean, yeah. I think that he's got a complex because he plays with Mike Trout. I'm sorry, but Pujols was the most feared hitter in baseball for over 10 years, and he's not anymore, and his teammate is. And I think that he absolutely is having that, okay, I'm getting older kind of thing, and for him to want to participate in the home run derby and be enthusiastic about it, that's like not a cool thing to do for like a guy as established as him. So yes, I think he is in that stage where he's like, I want to be a great player still. I'm good.
Yeah, wait till 5 years from now, man, when he's still got 2 more years left on that deal and he's 40. Ugh, it's going to be 40. It's going to be a mess. But I do not think, regardless of whether Pujols goes in as a Cardinal or not, I do not think you will have a bunch of Cardinal fans, even if they've made their peace with Pujols, making the pilgrimage to Cooperstown. I think if Yachty gets in, and he's got a few more years, quite a few more years ago, I think, to really be seriously considered. But if he were to get in, maybe. But otherwise, I don't think there are really any Cardinals. I think there's going to be a push for Jim Edmonds. I think he's maybe a little short. I think there's going to be a push for Jim Edmonds. I think
he's not a Hall of Famer.
I mean, there are some sabermetric people that make an argument for him. I think
sabermetric people do not vote, do not count in this.
They do. There's tons of sabermetric guys. Keith Law, like the whole crew. There's tons of sabermetric votes. I think he's still going to fall short. I still think he's going to fall short. I think some sabermetrics people even still think he falls short, even using sabermetrics. I just think he is a better case.
Amazing player. Okay, you put Jim Edmonds in, then you have to put Lance Berkman in.
I'm down for both, actually.
Neither one of them are Hall of Famers, but I like them both. They're great players.
I wonder if I bet Edmonds does a little better than Berkman in the voting, just because he played center field.
Of course. But, oh, he's amazing. He was an amazing player to watch. He was one of the greatest athletes during his era, without a doubt.
Let's not talk about voting. Let's talk about happy, awesome. You're gonna have this great weekend of celebration. You're gonna see Cooperstown for the first time. So yay! Have a wonderful time. Have a great time. And we'll talk. I'm sure we won't talk from Cooperstown unless. But you get settled in, and we'll talk when you get back. I'm excited to hear about it.
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you to Allison Footer, Footer and Leach Edition. Follow her on Twitter at Allison Footer, AllysonFooter. This is the Relationship Experience Podcast, Footer and Leach Edition. Please rate us on iTunes, Music for the Sundogs. We'll be back next week after Allison gets back from Cooperstown. Be safe, everybody.